It's just so good when it hits your lips. When you hear Creed and it's 5 o'clock on a Friday, driving home from work, it just doesn't get any better, man, than hearing Scott Stapp serenade you on your way home, done with the 9 to 5 for the week. Man, just crack one open. I guess not if you're driving. But crack one open as soon as you get home.
You heard it here first, everybody. John does not accept drinking and driving.
Hang on. Yeah, you know,
John's not an advocate for booze cruising.
Just three chords in the truth. I tell you what, Scotty Stapp. Well, we're going to be very self-indulgent here to start the second hour of the show because we have Mitch Baum coming up later on this segment. A completely self-indulgent bit in and of itself. We're coming off of Creed, and I'm going to sandwich in the middle of that this audio that I have now cleared. It was fine. I could have played it at the end of the first hour. But this will give us some more space for it as well. Joey Molinaro of Barstool Sports. Again, not a real fan of the Barstool vibe and brand, but I find him very funny, and I found him funny before he was signed by Barstool. His video that he put out today with him in a hat, a blazer with a t-shirt, and then a drawn-on goatee. It says, local sports talk host on first date. And this is what he proceeds to say, and it is quite funny.
How's the wine? Oh no, it's top tier. I told you. You come to me, I tell you, it's top tier. Yeah, I'd go as far as to say it's a top five wine in the country. I would. Up there with New York, Los Angeles, anything you can get out there. You know, the national folks want to come and tell you what they know and what wine is best. They don't know. They don't have boots on the ground. They're not here day in and day out. They don't know. Just ask waiter Kyle. He knows. Top five wine in the country? See? Waiter Kyle knows. Just got this text from Rick. It says, hey, Skip. How do you keep landing dates and I can't get past my right hand? Can't help you out there, Rick. That's on you, brother. Quick bathroom break. I'll be back right after this.
Oh, Mitch, is this going to be another thing that we're not on the same page about? I mean, the fact that he goes straight into top five wine and then complains about the national people swooping in. And then at the end, I can't help you, brother. And then bathroom break. I'll be back after this. I mean, that's very, very, very well done.
That totally made sports broadcasters or sports show hosts, radio hosts sound like just complete DBs. Like checking your phone during a date is not very cool.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, do you listen?
I don't talk like that. But, like, I don't think you would talk like that either.
Well, no. But this is a stereotype of sports radio guys in general. I mean, why do you think I love the Dan Le Batard show so much? It's because it's basically just making fun of local sports talk in the way that it is done, which is what I gravitate towards, because local sports talk guys generally are DBs.
I mean, I like a lot of them.
I like a lot of them, but they are. That is certainly the stereotype.
Like, maybe those in, like, Kansas City, they sound like that, but I don't think we sound like that at all. Like, that is not the vibe we put on.
Well, okay, but Joey
I just can't relate to it.
Yeah, okay. But Joey Molinaro is not doing this based on his opinion of Manhattan, Kansas sports talk radio.
I get it, but it feels like it's looping everybody together, though. Like, this is obviously, it's more of a big market sound, and that type of guy that has to be louder than everybody else, get the point across with a loud voice to be convincing. And I mean, top five this, top five that. Like, man, I could not relate to that. Like, and I'm trying to figure out why you thought it was funny.
Because I know enough about the industry that I work in to know that that is, like, hitting all of those stereotypes perfectly. Perfectly. Sports talk radio is very dumb, inherently. It's very dumb. I mean, and this goes to, I mean, especially the part about like, oh, top five wine or whatever. You know, it's how like ESPN is programmed. Like all the TV shows, you know, First Take, all that stuff. It's like these generic dumb topics, the top five this, top five that. Like it's all very dumb. That, again, that's why I like Lebatard. That's why I try and do our show a little bit differently than just like coming out here and being like, hey, what's your prediction on K-State West Virginia this weekend? You know, like I'd like to be more entertaining than that.
I could kind of understand like the sports radio host just wanting to talk about himself instead of talking about her or him or whoever that person's on a date with.
Oh, Mitch, you've ruined this. I thought it was funny.
It just didn't land with me, man. I don't if I'm on the road somewhere, I think the last thing I listen to is sports talk radio, because we our style is so much different that I enjoy it a lot more. It is different from what you would normally hear somewhere else. And it's a style I attract to more, not just because I'm a part of it, but it's something I would like to listen to if I was listening to sports talk radio.
Yeah, well, that's why you need to listen to the Lebatard Show. We
don't take ourselves that seriously.
I get very annoyed when the Lebatard Show talks sports. Like when they did a lot of Tom Brady, Drew Brees talk this week, and I was like, please spare me with this. Talk about things other than sports. And I'm not even saying like I want them to talk about politics or anything like that. It's when they're just messing around, like goofing around. That's what I enjoy. I want to be like entertained. I don't want to hear about who you think the top five quarterbacks of all time are. All right, it's just that fell on its face. Just get to Mitch Palm.
You've heard of Ken Palm. Well, that guy. Here's Mitch Palm with tonight's prediction.
Ken Palm, what a sham. This is the real deal. Mitch Palm is back.
Okay, before you get into that, though, Ken Palm is 1-0 against you this week. Beat you on Tuesday night.
First time ever. Mitch Palm is now at a 99% success rate. Big deal. One blemish on the record. No longer undefeated. Streaks have to come to an end at some point. It's now time for Mitch Palm to make a bounce-back effort in predicting K-State hosting number 14 West Virginia.
Okay, well, Ken Palm has this as a 73-61 win for West Virginia and gives K-State a 14% chance.
All right, well, let's talk about these two teams. You know, with Ken Palm, it's a lot of percentages, it's a lot of stats. You know, Mitch Palm will look into that too, but it's got to look at everything. It's got to look at the media notes, but it's got to look at past history and just what these two universities are all about. Now, there's going to be some that favor K-State. There's going to be some that favor West Virginia. But I just had to pick out a handful. I had to get down to the nitty-gritty of what this game is all about. All right, first thing, and I see this as a positive for K-State in this game on Saturday. One of the famous alumni for West Virginia is Cheryl Hines. Cheryl played Cheryl on Curb Your Enthusiasm. She was the wife of Larry David.
That's Larry David's wife?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I got to say, she was my least favorite character on the show. Talk about somebody you just can't relate to. She wasn't funny.
I don't think her character is intended to be funny, is it?
But she left Larry. I mean, it's a comedy show. It got better when Leon moved in the house and she got out.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, Leon is more funny than Cheryl.
But Cheryl's my least favorite, so because of that relationship, advantage K-State.
Okay, good.
Bad juju there for West Virginia, having some sketchy famous alumni. Now, here is something that I do not like for K-State, because I can't ignore all the stats. There are some that just really put some teams over the top. For instance, I was looking at the game notes for West Virginia. I was like, wow, this is not good for K-State. Do you know the Mountaineers are all-time 16-7 playing on January 23rd? This game tomorrow is on January 23rd, and I mean, percentages do not put that in K-State's favor. Also, John, this number is going to catch your attention.
See, that's like a stupid sports radio stat right there. Like, that's something that I feel like, you know, sports radio guy would come on and be like, January 23rd, fire everybody. They can't win on January 23rd.
But how about this, John? West Virginia has won 116 out of their last 129 games when holding opponents less than 69 points. So the 69 is the magic number here, John.
Well, now West Virginia is winning me back by using that as a line of demarcation in their game notes.
Now, this is big for K-State. Listen to this stat. This is big for the game on Saturday. Did you know West Virginia statistically is the worst shooting team in the Big 12? They're the worst. They're from the field 41.6%. K-State entering this game is second worst in the Big 12 at 41.7%. K-State is a tenth of a percentage better from the field. If K-State needs to win this, if they can win this game, they got knockdown shots. Well, they are a tenth of a percentage better than West Virginia.
This is too serious. I don't want serious analysis here.
All right, John, here we go. Here we go. We're really getting down to the nitty-gritty here because John Denver. We got to give a shout to John Denver and Take Me Home Country Roads.
But wasn't he an alum of someone else earlier this year? Didn't
we
have him?
Yeah, he's definitely not from West Virginia.
Okay.
He's not from West Virginia. We've had him in number one song. I believe this was actually a number one song of the day, if I remember right. But anyway, so John Denver released his song in 1971. So April of 71. So that was right at the tail end of K-State's 70-71 season. That was not a good year for K-State under Jack Hartman, going 11-15. That was a rough year. They went 6-8, fifth place in the Big 8. But if you compare and they compete 100 times, Country Road, Take Me Home, whatever it's called, versus the 70-71 Cats, John Denver is winning 73 out of 100 times, according to the statistics.
What was Jack Hartman doing going 11-15?
I don't know. It was weird times, especially that era. Like, next year, they're a lot better. Just an off year for the Cats.
6-8 in the Big 12. What kind of a non-con was he scheduling?
Now, more stats. Hey, did you know that K-State actually leads the series against West Virginia and Manhattan 5-3? You got to take in consideration that K-State, even though it's been crappy lately, they've won two straight against the Mountaineers at home, especially winning last year. West Virginia was number 12 in the country at the time. 2 years ago, the Cats had to come back from 21. It was the biggest comeback in K-State basketball history. That's really good juju for K-State if you're considering this matchup in West Virginia coming back from a two-week layoff. But finally, here's the final statistic here that is really going to sway either good or bad for K-State. So K-State during the Trump administration started out really good. All right, made it to an Elite Eight, won a Big 12 championship, but you know, towards the second half of that administration, it wasn't good. I mean, K-State went 11-21, the most losses in a season for K-State, and this year 5-10, and they end the Trump administration on a 5-game losing streak. But we have a new president. His name is Joe Biden. However, this is not good for K-State because Joe Biden has signed 17 executive orders in his first couple of days in office. One of those is not K-State starting to win again. That was not an executive order that was signed by Joe Biden, so I do not see that as good news for K-State. I will give the Wildcats a 29% chance of winning in Manhattan tomorrow afternoon, but I have the Mountaineers winning 70-62.
Okay, there you have it. Always a swerve or two. I was thinking it was going to be signed 17 executive orders and the 2017 K-State team lost to West Virginia. I'll learn my lesson to stop arguing with Mitch Baum, even though Mitch Baum was wrong earlier this week in his 0-1. Speaking of Mitch being wrong, we'll talk some Chiefs. Never has my confidence been higher as cocky Chiefs fan John next. Patrick Mahomes cleared, good to go, out of concussion protocol. Have fun with that. Buffalo Bills on Sunday. I was cocky last week, and I mean, if Mahomes doesn't get hurt, that thing's trending toward being a 21-point Chiefs win last Sunday over Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. So you know that I don't have any fear this week. I mean, the Bills are a cool story. I like Josh Allen, but really I should just downgrade it from a cool story to a cute story. The Bills are a cute story. Very cute. Josh Allen. You know, look at how much he's grown in the last 2 years. It's crazy. I mean, that's awesome. But Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he's the greatest North American athlete that has ever laced up a pair of cleats or shoes or whatever. And he's fine. I mean, it sounds like the toe is feeling better as well. Mahomes said today. The next day it was sore, but every day it's gotten a lot better. And so he's cool. No lingering effects from that hit that he took where he was all of a sudden wobbly. The toe's all right. Reports from practice were that he was moving around fine. It didn't look like the toe was bothering him at all. It's all gravy, baby. It's all gravy. I'm going to be A-okay. Just fine. Not worried about this for a second, man.
All right, so...
Free money, by the way. If you want to get the Chiefs... Can you still get the Chiefs at minus 2.5?
It's up to 3 now.
Oh, minus 3. I mean, still, free money.
Well...
Free money out there.
Vegas is saying it's basically a pick 'em, just giving Chiefs the advantage.
No, they're not, because, it's at...
They're getting the 3-point home bump.
Well, but it's a home bump in COVID times. It's a home bump in COVID times, and it's a home... That's also with the uncertainty surrounding Mahomes' status. Like, the line should be flying up to like 7 at this point. All right? Nothing to be worried about. Nothing to see here.
Man. All right. So, obviously, the Bills are not the same team that they were in Week 6, right? I mean, the Chiefs beat them by, what was it, 26-17, something like that?
Correct.
And, since that time, that was Week 6. Okay, so when the Bills were averaging like 24, 25 points a game, since that game, the second half of the season, past Week 6, the Bills' offense was much better, and they still are much better, averaging 35 points a game. All right, that's got to be better than Kansas City's numbers. All right, Josh Allen was a top 3 quarterback in the NFL this year, top 5 at the least. Stephon Diggs is arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL this year. And I think Chiefs fans are completely underestimating the Bills. There's weight. I understand the confidence. You deserve that confidence. There's just not enough respect for the opponent that's coming into town.
Stop me. You know, everyone talks about this. The Bills winning streak. You know, they won 6 in a row. I guess it's more than 6 now. It's 8 in a row because 2 playoff games. But... you know, this run at the end of the regular season. Stop me when I get to a good team. The Chargers, the 49ers, the Steelers, the Broncos, the Patriots, the Dolphins.
I mean, for a while, if you look at the division round game, Baker Mayfield was throwing all over the Chiefs secondary. They just couldn't finish drives. That's what Buffalo does. They throw the football.
Okay, but they didn't finish drives. That's an important part of football these days. A lot of offenses can move the ball. That's why the strategy for defenses has shifted from just being dominant to can you win the turnover margin and can you force field goals? Especially when you have Mahomes and the Chiefs offense. Like, good luck scoring with the Chiefs.
I'm just saying, like, the hype around, you know, not going to a Super Bowl since 93. You know, Buffalo, you know, if you look back, they lost those 4 Super Bowls in a row. There's so much history. Look at the Chiefs leading up to Super Bowl 54 and not winning a Super Bowl for 50 years and how awesome that was for Chiefs fans, you know, waiting all their lives to finally win it all. Well, there's Buffalo fans out there that have had to deal with a lot of heartache, and they're ready to win it all for the first time in ever.
Well, okay, but that doesn't just, like, guarantee you that...
Well, no, it's not guarantee. I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
It doesn't have any bearing on the actual game.
It's a similar story. You just called the Buffalo Bills story a cute story when it wasn't not that long ago when the Chiefs were in a very similar situation.
And then the Chiefs busted through because they have the greatest North American athlete that has ever lived. And the only reason... I'm sure he's the greatest athlete that's ever lived, but I don't have enough knowledge of like what's been happening in Germany over the last 100 years in sports. Mesut Ozil. That's like the first soccer. Poor Scott Wildcat out there, like our soccer fan listeners. That's a poll from my old FIFA days. I have no idea like how good he actually was or whatever. No idea if he would actually outrank Patrick Mahomes. But I digress. The Chiefs have Pat, man. I mean, that's the trump card for everything.
Because of your lack of respect for the Buffalo Bills, I'm picking Buffalo to win.
I mean, of course you are, just to troll me.
That, and I think they can legit win this
game. You don't believe that.
I do.
You do not believe that the Bills are going to win. That is purely to try and
I bet you that the Bills win.
You're going to bet?
Why not?
You're going to bet that the Bills beat the Chiefs.
I'm pretty confident, just because... I mean, you're kind of talking me into it to a certain extent, because I can see this without biased glasses on. That Chiefs red glasses, I don't own a pair. All right? I can see this very unbiased, and I understand how good the Bills are. They've had to make the run of – they've had to play a couple of games already. They're not coming off a week where Patrick Mahomes and their quarterback was limited. because as we see in the wrestling business, was on Dream Street after getting choked out a little bit.
Well, the thing is, after I take off my red glasses, I still look down at my hand and I have pocket aces. One of them is Patrick, the other is Mahomes. So well, I'm fine. If you want to put your money where your mouth is, put your money where your mouth is. We'll bet. I will make a bet. The last time I made an official on-air bet, I wound up with a Patrick Mahomes jersey out of it.
Well,
ask Mason how that went.
Everybody knows in the poker world that some people get a little bit too confident with pocket aces, and they don't realize when the flop comes out that maybe they might not be in the lead anymore, but they still overplay the hand with confidence, and then they get to the turn in the river, and they get to a point where they're going to be shot when they turn over their pocket aces with confidence and find out they just lost a two pair or trips. Because it's still very possible to lose with pocket aces. Pocket aces is the best hand to start with, but sometimes, and a lot of the time, it's not the best hand at the end of the round.
The only flop that is going to be happening on Sunday is Josh Allen flopping and trying to fling a ball backwards, lateraling it like he did in the playoffs last year unsuccessfully. The only river is going to be a river of tears coming out of Josh Allen's eyes at the end of the game.
That's okay, it. So you're 100% confident that the Chiefs win Sunday.
Of course. Of course. I go through this every week with Cole in our group chat, where it's like he reacts like as if it's a normal game and as if the Chiefs aren't playing a game that's rigged, which they are at this point. But, you know, something will happen and it's, oh, meltdown. Like, how can you? This is going to cost them the game. Like, whatever it is. Andy Reid, whoever the scapegoat is, like, why? You're going to cost us this, that. Like Cole, Mahomes, like they're playing a rigged game. You don't lose. I mean, they've lost one time since what, like the middle of last season, whenever that Tennessee game was, like January, the last calendar year, they've lost once. It's a rigged game. They'll be fine.
Okay, so put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, well, I bet. And when I win, no, you know what?
You want me to go here? Listen. If the Chiefs lose, you finally have to watch Back to the Future.
Mm.
See, now the confidence is not there anymore, is it? Because I just threw a movie out there that you don't want to watch, and now all of a sudden, your confidence isn't there.
I don't at all want to watch that. But I am confident enough in the Chiefs that I 100% will make that bet. 100% will make that bet.
Wow.
I mean, of course. Of course.
I'm glad I cornered you with this.
And then the natural thing for me to do here is that even though I tried to make you listen to my podcast of my beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, the in-depth breakdown of that, tried to make you listen to that on the way back from Mason's wedding, I'll just make you listen to you've got to listen to the whole album. You've got to listen to the whole album.
The whole album. How long is it?
The whole album. I don't know. You figured out. Pretty long. All the songs are like 6 minutes long.
What's it called? My ugly, bright, straight dream?
That's pretty bad trolling. That's pretty bad trolling there, Mitch. It's my beautiful, dark, twisted fantasy. You've heard me say it enough times by now.
Oh, God, it took me 7 letters for it to finally pop up in the Google thing.
Greatest album ever created.
Oh, boy. Let's see here. An hour 10? Am I seeing that right?
Probably. Probably. Oh. We'll just keep it at that. That's the bet.
It's an hour 9, so yeah, okay, fine.
That's the bet. And just straight up, not.
I need to get this in writing because if the Bills win, I don't think you'll actually take the time to watch Back to the Future.
Well, like, you've got all these.
Need to be there in person.
You've got all these witnesses out here. Everybody within earshot of my voice right now, you've heard this. So there are a number of people there to hold my feet to the fire, Mitch. Which, of course, will never happen. The only fires that will be occurring are tables on fire that members of Bill's Mafia go flying through, win or lose, on Sunday.
This looks like a scandalous album cover.
Yeah, it had to be pixelated. Most places, you go find it. There were a couple different versions of the album cover, but the main one is pixelated. If you go like find it right now on Spotify or something, it is. Yeah. All right.
So it's on.
It's set.
John will be watching Back to the Future soon. Finally going to happen.
It's cute. Number one song of the day is next. just talking about this gentleman, were we not?
We were, yeah, yesterday.
And this gentleman, of course, is Bruno Mars.
From 1988, The Way You Make Me Feel by Michael Jackson. Just 1 week at number one, but this is my favorite Michael Jackson song.
This is?
It is.
I've said before, like, I'm not like a real massive fan of the music, but I mean, there are better songs than this. Than that Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson's best songs. Oh, like Wannabe Starting Something? I feel like that's
got a great music video to it. But, of course, Michael.
Oh, here's the best Michael Jackson song, bitch. I'm sorry to cut you off. You'll understand why it was so important. The best Michael Jackson song is actually a cover. It is, of course, his cover of Alien Ant Farm's Smooth Criminal.
Oh. Michael Jackson in the Jackson family from Gary, Indiana. He was the eighth child of the Jackson family. And, Michael, he made his professional debut as a child in 1964 with his older brothers, Jackie, Tito, Jermaine, and Marlon in the Jackson 5. And then Michael began his solo career in 1971. He's dubbed the King of Pop, and he's one of the most successful artists of all time, selling over 350 million albums worldwide. He died June 25th, 2009, at the age of 50. His death was caused by an overdose of a medication that typically puts you under for surgery. A doctor did prescribe it to him, if I could say it. And the doctor got in some trouble for a while. I don't remember how all that turned out, but it was a big deal for a while. In 2016, his estate earned $825 million, the highest yearly amount for a celebrity of any form, recorded by Forbes magazine.
Good, like, they're still making that much?
A ton of money.
Man.
Yeah. 10 studio albums, solo studio albums, 30 top tens. This was his ninth of 13 number ones from the seventh album, Bad, which had sales over 35 million copies worldwide. Now, before recording Bad, Michael Jackson had actually written over 60 songs for this album, which he had a plan of releasing a three-disc album, but his producer, Quincy Jones, convinced him, no, just do the one disc. Everybody's going to love it. And so that's what he did. Now, Michael, he wrote this song himself, along with many of his other hits like Billie Jean and Beat It. Now, I thought this was pretty cool that, and I didn't know it before I read about it. So on the Bad tour to promote the album, Michael wanted to hire a female singer to perform with him on this song, kind of like a duet type of thing. You know, most of the song is Michael singing to a woman. So he hired none other than a very young Sheryl Crow to be his tour singer. Yeah.
That just does not seem to be... like, that seems like a very odd couple.
She said one time in an interview that there were some nights that he was just completely checked out. And it just wasn't into it some nights, but then some, he was really into it. And so it just depended on the night if Michael was going to bring it that night or not.
But I feel like it has to be that way with pretty much anybody going on tour, right?
I'm sure it could be. Following Michael Jackson's death, you know, a lot of his music experienced a surge in popularity again on the charts as this song charted within the top 10, peaking at number 6 on the Billboard Hot Digital Songs on July 11th of 2009 due to the digital download sales. I mean, that was a big part when he died. You know, people start buying his albums again because, of course, there's a nostalgic value. You want to honor Michael Jackson. You want to get familiar again with the discography. And so people start buying his albums again and made just as much money, just about as much money as he passed away as he was making a living.
Yeah, here's the thing with me and Michael Jackson, I think, more than anything. So, one, I'm too young to have, like, experienced much of his music coming out during my lifetime. And then two, like the Michael Jackson that I knew was the Michael, like the weird dark side of Michael Jackson that nobody ever seems to want to really talk about here, and the headlines about Neverland and Macaulay Culkin and like yeah. that. I mean, that's the Michael Jackson that I grew up knowing, and I'm like,
the Michael you know is the South Park episode.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So I
moving to South Park. Yeah, that whole.
I mean, I get it. I know that any. I mean, all the artists that I love, with a lot of them. I mean, Kanye is definitely referenced, like Michael Jackson, big influence. Anybody, I get how much of an influence that he had on pop music, and I love pop music, but better separate the art from the artist.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, though. Like, I'm very much innocent until proven guilty. I'm a firm believer in that because it makes me sick when I hear stories of people being wrongly convicted. I'm not here to say he did or didn't do it, but I try not to judge when they're found not guilty. All right? I just got to put it that way. I'm trying to be completely fair here, even though I do have my suspicions as well.
Yeah. And I'm Bleeding Heart guy. I understand that a lot of his upbringing had to do with some of how that probably all went down at the end, but
I just know when people are charged with very serious crimes and it gets out there in the media, they're already extremely behind the eight ball, and especially those who are innocent and are trying to fight their way out. It's a very, very tough thing to do.
Yeah,
and I'm sure if he did do it, I'm sure his celebrity status is what kept him from being convicted. But I'm no expert in this situation.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. Don't like it. The end of the week sound extravaganza is something that I do like, and that's next. It is the end of the week sound extravaganza, the best and funniest things that have happened on the show this week. And I will start the bidding with a great couple of moments from today and our good friend Kelly Robine, a.k.a. Kellis Robinette of the Wichita Eagles. I'm just picturing like a Kellis, like the old AOL Instant Messenger, like an AIM chat room or something with like three Kellises in there talking to each other. That's what I'm picturing. Yes, that was because Kellis said that he has interacted with the only three people in the world named Kellis or something like that, one of which was this gentleman.
They had a kicker line up to kick a field goal, and his name was Kellis Cunningham. I was hardly paying attention to the show. I found the guy on Facebook, and I just sent a message, and I said, hey, man, we got the same name. We should be friends. And we're still friends today. We are still Facebook friends.
That's a pretty great story. I thought of this, too. When I was actually at Boys State, something that I did not want to go to, but my parents made me go to here in Manhattan when I was like a junior in high school, I remember that somebody stole my computer, a friend of mine, took my computer there and went to Facebook and just searched Jennifer and added like the first eight Jennifers that popped up, just totally random people that I had never met. And, you know, a handful of them actually accepted the friend request. And like, I mean, I think to this day, there's still at least one Jennifer that's like stuck around that I have no idea how I know her. And every once in a while I see it. Similar story.
When I was in high school, there was a Mitch Fortner that was a beat writer for Florida State.
Oh.
And he added me when I was in high school, but we never, ever talked. We never shared any dialogue. He added me as a friend, and
wow.
But we're not friends anymore.
Wow, I'm going to have to go find some John Kurtzes. Anybody out there who was rightfully offended by Mitch Fortner this morning on K-Man's Morning News, just know that it only comes from a place of jealousy.
Okay.
Well, that is confirmed. Mitch was trying to, you know, screw with everybody's emotions this morning about Patrick Mahomes. Because he's jealous that he roots for the Dallas Cowboys and his quarterback probably still can't walk right now.
You've heard of Ken Palm. Well, that guy. Here's Mitch Palm with tonight's prediction.
Mad scientist Mitch Palm in the lab. I'm very proud of that intro that I created this week, Mitch. How you feeling about it?
It's all right. I was never a big science guy growing up, but I definitely respect it.
You are now. You are now.
Well, that guy.
I mean, the best part there, right? That makes the whole thing. It doesn't work without having to bleep out Mitch's real, true inner thoughts about Ken Palm.
Tell me where in the world is
Baylor in Newell's ballot. It was like I was already doing our greatest hits of, bits and production elements there, so why not throw in a little Newell's Ballad? But also, Mitch, you didn't even hear this. It was a historic Baylor and Newell's Ballad. This is the biggest upset that I have seen in a long, long time. Jesse also is not even listed on the three most extreme ballots this week. I don't know whether to celebrate it or view it as the end of the bit. Unfortunately, I feel like it could be the end of the bit. Like, it could be the death of Baylor and Newell's ballot. If we go another week or two where Jesse's not even making the most extreme ballots list anymore, no point in even doing it. He looks like a man who is stressed about trying to sell half a dozen F-150s by the end of the week. We're just not on the same page of what we think is funny today. That's how I felt the entire week. Every time I bring something to the table that I think is really funny, Mitch just gives me this blank stare. Just a totally blank stare. It's been off. This guy's out here talking about, like, we're going to be biting off kneecaps. What kind of roided up, overroided, dumb response is that? That was not the most eloquent thing I've ever said, but Dan Campbell, whatever that guy's name is, out here talking about biting kneecaps? I mean, come on. But the bio underneath the dog says, looking for someone who doesn't mind me filming us hooking up for me and my boyfriend. And it's a picture of this dog.
My reaction, it is quite obvious how bad you need a girlfriend.
Well, you're not wrong. Okay, I mean, that was a hilariously funny bit. People loved that on social media, all the different platforms, Mitch. You are in the wrong there, and this is what I have to say to you.
Well, that guy.